Guardian Unlimited. The Guardian podcast, sponsored by Volvo. The all-new Volvo C70 invites you to feel. It's time to open up and see life in a different light.
Hello, welcome to Media Talk, the weekly podcast from the team that brings you Media Guardian. I'm Matt Wells. This week, it's back. The new series of Doctor Who is about to hit the screens, and we'll be hearing from David Tennant and Billy Piper, the stars of the show. We'll pick over the latest on Greg Dyke's bid for ITV with our podcast panel, and Gareth McLean gets his claws into Kirsty Allsop. Let me introduce the panel first, though. What a lineup we have. Kim Fletcher, who writes a press column for Media Guardian. He's cycled all the way from his home to be here.
Certainly have, at great speed.
Very fit man. Steve Hewlett, Media Guardian's agony uncle. You braved public transport to be here.
In a taxi.
A taxi. Public transport let you down.
I let down.
And Emily Bell, well, you trundled all the way
I
over.
I walked 50 yards quite slowly.
Thank you for coming. First of all, thank you for emailing us after last week's effort and mentioning us on your blogs. We were even mentioned on a Portuguese blog, actually, which is very interesting, reading about yourself in Portuguese. Yes,
possibly.
Absolutely. I'm particularly pleased to get this email from a certain Guy Ruddle. Guy Ruddle is the editor of the lovely people at the Telegraph podcast, who we like a lot.
We like them a lot. We particularly like Guy, who's lovely.
Yeah, he says that he thought it was great. P.S. I think you need Matt, he says, to develop a flirting relationship with Gareth.
That's a Telegraph for you, isn't it? It's all into sort of trashy, personal shock sensation. We don't go in for that sort of thing, do we?
We go in for much more serious things, like, for example, ad revenue dropping at the Sun this week. Big story from the world of tabloid newspapers, which said that the ad revenue at News International's main tabloid fell by 7.48%. Kim Fletcher, what does it all mean?
Well, it all means it's quite tough for newspapers, but sometimes we fail really to work out how we run our own lives. I've been working in newspapers for 25 years, and how often do I actually read the ads? So journalists spend all their time doing their best to get ads out of papers, and commercial departments, of course, spend all their time trying to squeeze ads into papers. And often there's a big row between the two when the ad department wants to break up a beautiful-looking page for an ad, and occasionally you get very powerful editors, or you did in the old days, you'd throw ads off the page. But coming back to the Sun and for the pop papers, things are looking very sticky because, of course, newspapers depend on ad revenue. The balance used to be about 50-50, half from selling your paper, half from taking advertising revenue. And when your ad revenue starts to drop in the way it's dropping at the Sun, then that's a big worry. But it's not something we haven't all been seeing over the last 18 months.
It's the latest incarnation of a trend, effectively. Is it worse for the popular papers than for the broadsheets?
Well, this is what's... it's been a very interesting market to watch, because going back something like a couple of years, when we were selling off the Telegraph, Jeremy Deeds, who has been in the business for, 30, 40, 50 years, who knows, his father for 100 years, but he was saying he'd never known an ad market like it, and clearly it was going to get better.
This was
when I was editorial director at the Telegraph, and we were selling it, and potential bidders were looking at the books. And we all thought it has to come back, or it must come back, but we half thought, well, is it going to come back? And all the signs are that advertising revenue is not coming back to newspapers. The pop end of the market is being hit badly. But in the end, you have to look at the way you run your life. Do you spend your time reading the ads, or do you spend your time flicking through the paper?
Is it more of a cultural thing, Emily Bell, in terms of the popular papers per se? Do you think they feel like, they seem to me to feel like quite an old-fashioned product? I mean, if you look on the Tube and young people, they're reading Metro.
It's interesting this, because the circulation base for the qualities actually was much lower to start off with. When we started to lose circulation, obviously cover prices has traditionally been sort of slightly more important for the quality press than it has for the tabloid press. When we started to lose circulation, there was a great reinvention in the qualities that's taken place over the last 2 years, with the Independent and the Times going tabloid, with the Guardian going Berliner format. We haven't really seen a reinvention of the tabloids. What we have seen is a massive rise in the trading on celebrity and television, that actually sort of turning into entertainment showbiz papers rather than newspapers. Has been something that's happened over the last 5 years or so. But in terms of, you pick up Metro for free in the morning on the Tube.
In
every city in Britain now. And, this is a younger demographic. They're going online for their news. They're getting, all of their kind of information from other sources. And I think the tabloids, despite if you just look at the headline figures, they, you know, they're selling more. They're a much bigger market segment of the papers than the qualities. But actually,
well,
the
they funda- have f- further yeah, to fall. Further
but
to
they
fall.
Have further to fall, and essentially, it's their readership which is going away and not coming back. And I think that, you know, in the 80s, lots of people said about Kelvin McKenzie, the great thing about Kelvin was he kept working class men reading newspapers throughout the 1980s. And I don't think you've got a Kelvin actually in the popular press at the moment that's making young people.
I think that's a very good point. And if you look at the ads in the Sun, the most depressing area of the Sun is the big advertising area is close to the back, which is all about debt relief. They're advertising to people who won't be given credit by anyone else. Here's a cheap way of getting credit. Here's how you can buy a car, and it's mobile phones. And if you go to the other end of the tabloid, if you go to the muckier end of the tabloid, it's all sex and chat phone line advertising. And it's a really depressing area. As you thumb through it, you think the people who need this sort of advertising...
This is why Rebecca Wade has, I believe, sort of promised Rupert Murdoch that she's going to get his big social networking site that he's bought in the States, MySpace.com, plugged into the Sun by, I think, July. I mean, that's a really kind of tough deadline. I'm sure News International will move heaven and earth to make it. But there's an issue there as well, which is, you know, nobody's shown us how to monetize MySpace.com either. And I mean, you know, Kim spent some time online, as indeed, you know, my day job's there as well. You know, everybody raves about MySpace. It's a great big site. I don't see how it's going to work for the Sun in the way that they expect it to, which is propping up kind of readership and bringing in revenues. I just don't see it.
Steve Hewlett, the broadcasters, which is your area of expertise, they've had much more success in reinventing themselves for the digital age, haven't they, than the newspapers, do you think?
Well, I mean, thus far, but only, well, one suspects, because it's much harder. Technically speaking, we're only just on the verge of an internet system that can cope with moving their material around with sort of gay abandon. You know, people in the print media have had the internet doing their business and encroaching on their business, you know, pretty big time for quite a long time. Video on the internet is now reasonably common, but even now most people can't get decent television pictures, not streamed live, or not in any decent level of quality. So we're only on the verge of what it can do to television, I think, is the first thing. But the other thing is, you know, I mean, the broadcasters are also looking to kind of, you know, enhance their earnings from, you know, different markets. So ITV bought Friends Reunited.
Why?
Well, there is a rationale for it. Whether you buy it or not, I think is a much bigger question. The rationale is Friends Reunited has got 10 million subscribers, most of whom are young, trendy, relatively upmarket, i.e. not the people who watch ITV. So somehow, but without explaining quite how you join the bits up, ITV intends to bring those people into its family and find ways of
Emily is shaking her head.
Do you know, people in new media do sit around and they laugh and laugh and laugh and say £170 million for Friends Reunited.
Thank you
Why? This comes down to the fact that, and this is not a job application for a whole portfolio of non-executive directorships, but if you're willing to offer them, thank you very much. This comes down to the fact, you look at the boards of these companies, where are the people with hands-on experience of digital businesses?
There aren't any,
and they've said, Friends Reunited, we've heard of it, we'll buy it.
No, but in fairness, it's a bit like trying to hitch MySpace onto the Sun. Yeah. You know, in theory, you think, actually, I can see the point here. It's not the daftest idea.
It's the cost.
But practically, how do you actually do it?
And also the cost at which it's done. Everything now on the web is being developed at a fraction of the price that it was developed 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 2 years ago. If ITV spent £170 million on some really sharp 22-year-old developers and said, build us some community software, take our audiences, see what you can do with them, and find new audiences, get so much more payback than they would from buying some
Greg
kind of
Dyke manages,
site,
if Greg right? Dyke manages to buy ITV, you could be the chairman. Emily.
Yes, well, not after this week. I said Greg Dyke, completely the wrong person to run ITV. Right, yeah. So no,
Steve Hewlett, how is this? You know, you were an ITV shareholder, is that right?
Until last Monday.
So you can now freely speak about.
Well, up to a point, I still have some options in the pipeline.
Right, this ITV bid seems to be taken seriously, being taken seriously.
Oh, I think it is being taken seriously, and the institutions. My feeling is the institutions are quite keen on this or something like it. For individual shareholders, it's a rather more mixed picture, because I won't bore you with the details. The tax implications of the way this deal is being structured is quite troublesome. I think my suspicion is that if they manage to come up with an option that enables individual shareholders to sell out completely rather than be subject to a special dividend and a diluted stock as a consequence. The tax consequences of that for individuals can be quite horrendous. So it doesn't matter to institutions, it does matter to individuals. If they're able to come up with a buyout price as well as the option of taking a special dividend and reduced stock, I think many more people will probably go for it.
So is this the one? Will it happen? Either this week or next week or at some point soon?
Well, I can't say. I'm not in anybody's head. I don't know. The straightforward answer is I don't know whether it'll happen. It seems to me quite likely to happen, provided they can overcome some of these wrinkly difficulties, because the truth is, most venture capitalists who've looked at ITV, and I know a number who I've spoken to in one form or another, who run the rule over it before, nobody can get over 95 pence. For a buyout price to make a venture capital type return, like multiply your money by 3 or 4 in the course of 4 or 5 years max, right? Nobody can get over 95 pence. If a trade buyer comes along, that's someone who can see ITV as synergistic with the rest of their business, let's say Warner Brothers, who were at one point mooted, then, of course, in one sense, the sky's the limit. They're American. £5 billion is a footnote on the account.
What do they want with ITV?
The only thing about this is because this might flush out a trade buyer.
It might do. Kim Fletcher, for hacks like us, it would be great to have Greg Dyke running ITV, wouldn't it?
Well, it will give us something to laugh about, I suppose. The thing that astonishes me about television, though, I watch television, of course, I've got children who watch television, is how little the sort of branding of television seems to matter to me now. Because, you know, there are so many digital channels, I am only vaguely aware of what ITV is and does now.
When my eldest son was 6 years old, and he's now 8, and he watches a lot of television, he said to me, "What's ITV?" Now, you know, this is a real problem. ITV, yeah, what is
right.
ITV?
That's it.
It's all over. I'll say it again. It's all over for linear television. It's a very difficult job to do.
If you said, "Watch Channel 4, they'll know.
The challenge for
ITV, and this is the question about Greg Dyke in one sense, the challenge for ITV in its traditional business is if there is life in the old dog yet, first of all, he's quite likely to be the best person to find it. Secondly, he's got to reinvent it as something cool.
Completely disagree. I think Greg is great. I think he would be a fantastic chairman of ITV. I think he's completely the wrong person to be chief executive. And I think the city slightly feels that as well. And if they had Tony Ball or Dorneri or somebody like that who's got pay and digital experience attached to it, I think they would stand a much better chance. And in some ways, actually, I think Greg lacks credibility in a crucial area there.
I only said in terms of finding life in ITV1.
Yeah, okay.
In terms of the future of the company, I think.
But the future of the company is.
We could go on all day about ITV. Fascinating though it is. More from the panel in a moment. First, though, very excitingly, this week, it was the press launch of the second series of the revived Doctor Who, and I went down to Cardiff with the rest of the press pack to find out what's in store for us. The BBC has managed to attract quite an impressive array of press down from London to Cardiff for this screening. It's probably the only show, Doctor Who's probably the only show that the BBC could attract such a turnout to Cardiff with. Normally screenings like this would take place in the capital, but the BBC is keen to show off its regional production base. The verdict of the reporters and the writers here will be important because these sorts of events are key for broadcasters who want to build up a level of hype before series like Doctor Who goes to air. So the screening is just about to begin here at the Millennium Centre in Cardiff. And let's wait and see what people have to say. I suppose, given the success of the first season of Doctor Who, this is where the backlash could begin. So an army of zombies with 1,000 diseases and a race of cats that seem determined to kill the new humans and new Earth. New Earth saved by the new Doctor seems to have done it for this audience. Well, that was a pretty rapturous reception. Not surprising, I suppose, given that many of the audience were cast and crew and friends. But for my money, it was pretty damn good. David Tennant is a terrific actor and he's a great Doctor too. He's got a great range, a warmth and an energy and a steeliness about him too when the moment calls for it. We're going to find out a bit more about what he thinks about it now, and Billy Piper indeed as well, because they're going to be doing a Q&A with reporters. Matt Wells from The Guardian, how did it feel being the new guy?
Well, the worst bit about that was before we started. It's all the hoo-ha that comes with this show. It's the fact that everyone is so fascinated by it. I mean, obviously that's that partly makes it the most wonderful job in the world, but it also makes it the most terrifying job in the world. When I finished my first day of filming, I remember going home and collapsing. This, the amount of nervous energy that had been building up in the months previous to getting going. But I suppose it could have been awful, but because of Bill and because of Noel and Camille and Russell and Julie Gardner and Phil Collinson
and the
most extraordinary crew, they are.
Yeah.
And it's I've been
it's
so
been quite
welcomed.
Smooth sailing, I think.
It really has, yeah. I've been so welcomed and so I've never for a moment felt like anyone thinks I shouldn't be here, which is always your terror when you start a new job.
What's been your biggest sort of shock factor when you've been reading the scripts?
I was quite shocked at the ones that we're filming now because they deal with the devil and that's always quite a spooky concept for me. And it was terrifying. I just find that those two
really
scripts really dark. In a good way. It's quite thought-provoking.
And the other one, because we're doing two at once at the moment, because it's all gone mad and we've only got 3 days to go. And the other one that we're filming at the moment is shocking because it's unlike anything Doctor Who's ever done before.
It's,
I think,
really
it's a real
proper
experimental episode.
It's called Love and Monsters.
Yeah.
And
we've got Peter Kay, we've got Mark Warren, we've got Shirley Henderson.
Wonderful.
We've got the
cast.
Most incredible cast.
Yeah.
And from Russell, the most extraordinary script. Yeah.
So I'm here with Russell T. Davies, who is the lead writer and executive producer on Doctor Who. Russell, how did you approach the second series after the great success of the first one? Did that daunt you in any way?
It was a bit. It was terrifying because if the programs failed, then you can have nice constructive thoughts and try to work out how to get it to work. When something's successful, it's very scary. You do sort of sit there and think, what the hell did we do? But actually, we didn't have time to stop, and we just carried straight on in production.
And Series 2 with a new Doctor, what do you think that the new actor, David Tennant, brings to the role?
Well, he brings, it sounds obvious, but Chris brought a great Chris Ecclestonness to the Doctor, and David brings a great David Tennantness to the Doctor,
which is,
and he talks faster, has a more slightly more manic energy. He likes to dress a little more studenty and a little bit more punky almost, and that's very much, that's partly the way David likes to look.
And the first series was, as we've said, very successful, but funnily enough, not nominated for a lot of awards. And why do you think that is?
Oh, let me lose on that one.
Yeah.
It's like, I knew it wouldn't be, and I mean, it was nominated for plenty of awards when it comes to millions of people voting in the National Television Awards, swept the board. When it comes to,
When it comes to the industry awards.
Yes, when it comes to, I mean, we have done nicely, but I knew we wouldn't get many BAFTA nominations, and I bet when it comes to the craft awards, I bet we'll have very, very few, whereas our makeup and our design, they should all be nominated. People think it's science fiction.
I was going to say, why is that?
I think it's a snobbery, which the audience doesn't have, but there is an absolute snobbery of you watch a Charles Dickens adaptation and you're clapping and going, oh, marvellous. Well, marvellous antique lace collars there on that. Whereas if you watch a Bird Woman from the 57th century, you just take that lightly and you don't imagine that someone put a whole 2 weeks' work of thought and work into it.
And does that make you angry?
It does, absolutely. It's like, I will be furious if, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. You always sound a bit stupid raging about awards and they don't matter in the end. But if our design and costume and makeup and effects departments aren't nominated, I will be furious. There's nothing I can do, but it just goes to show what a whole load of nonsense is.
Well, there's a great sense of achievement here tonight from everyone involved in the programme, from the executives to the actors. A few gripes about what their peers think of it, not being nominated for very many awards, but I suppose the main thing will be what the audience thinks of it. 10 million viewers watched the Christmas special. Will that be matched for the new series? We'll soon find out when the show goes to air. So, Russell T. Davies there was not very happy, Emily, about the fact that it hadn't been nominated for very many BAFTAs. Didn't get the RTS award either. He said it was snobbery.
Well, you know, the RTS award went to Bodies. Now, purely subjectively, I watched Doctor Who, every single one of them, greatly enjoyed them. I watched Bodies. I thought Bodies was the best thing that the BBC has done for 10 years. It was cancelled. You know, Doctor Who's got all the kind of telepolitics going in its favour. Steve and I were actually banned from talking about it.
Why?
Steve chaired the BAFTA jury for drama,
the best drama
series.
In which,
yes,
Doctor Who was a contender.
In which it's a contender.
And I was on the jury,
and we can't talk about it.
And I know the result, and I can't talk about
it. Well, we could reveal it exclusively, our minor, but there's not very many people listening, really. It's just the whole internet. On the broader point, is he right about the snobbery about this show?
Well, I mean, look,
You know, people think period drama. Marvelous.
Well, do you know what? I mean, please don't read anything into this in terms of what happened at the jury. But actually, in this case, all the discussion of this really there wasn't a hint of snobbery about it. And I think that there is some. What's happened is, once upon a time, you know, popular drama would be, people would look down their noses at popular drama, peak practice, as if it was sort of in some sense trashy or rubbishy. Actually, what's happened is, and this is, I think, characteristic of BBC drama across the piece. One of the things that was noticeable sitting on that jury is the quality of BBC drama, broadly, is fantastically high. Mm. And they really are managing, and I say, you know, I say this not as a particular support of the BBC, they really are managing to combine popular with really, really good. Well, and across the piece, the thing about Doctor Who is, when you watch it, it's really, really good. Right. It's not trash rubbish. It's not Bad Girls, which is good in its own way, but has got a sort of definite sort of trashy tinge to it. Well, this is good.
Jane Tranter, who's the head of drama commissioning at the BBC, I talked to her as well down at Cardiff, and she had a kind of a theory which relates to what you said. Here's what she said.
In truth, I am surprised, and to be brutally honest, I am very disappointed. But I think that there is something about Doctor Who which is so effortlessly entertaining that it just doesn't show its colours in terms of quite how brilliant a piece of drama it is than other shows which are much more... Here we've done a classic adaptation, it's very obvious how clever, it's very obvious how difficult it's been to achieve. Or here we've done a piece about the state of Britain today. Doctor Who hides the talent and the expertise that's put into it. So I am surprised and disappointed, but I think we'll work to change that.
But it's very obvious how successful it's been, though. For some reason, success doesn't equal plaudits from your peers. I wonder why you think that is.
I don't think you can do anything in our industry and expect plaudits from peers. I don't think that's unique to television. I think that's the same anywhere. I look at awards much in the same way that I look at having children. I think that you have to give the whole time and never expect to receive. And when you do, it's absolutely brilliant.
There we are. We have to expect to give and not to receive, Kim.
Well, I was completely on the side of Doctor Who against the metropolitan elite sitting with me until I heard Jane Trenter come up with that sanctimonious bit of nonsense.
TV, however, before I let you go, though, guys, we have to talk about the TV moment of the week, which was The Apprentice. And she's out.
You're fired. You're annoying, and you're fired.
How many times she was in that boardroom?
She was in there four. Yes. Four times.
Fired on the fourth,
sore every time. It's bad. Bad for the good for business, bad for the series, I would say. I think, you know, she was sort of box office, but clearly, you know, her and Saeed are the most annoying but watchable characters in there.
Well, Joe is finally out. I don't know if it'll be quite the same, but a terrific series nonetheless. Thank you very much to a terrific panel, to Kim Fletcher, to Steve Hewlett and to Emily Bell, and we'll have one or two of you back next week, perhaps.
Experience a whole new driving reality for yourself. To see the all-new Volvo C70, visit www.volvocars.co.uk.
Media monkey Gareth McLean is back with us again after a barnstorming performance last week. Hooray! Now, Russell T. Davies, when we were speaking to him earlier on down in Cardiff, he was not very happy that Doctor Who hadn't been nominated in the BAFTAs. You've been looking down the list.
I have been looking down the list. And to be honest, apart from the Best Actress, it's a bit of a disappointing list, Julie. Actor, Bernard Hill, Dennis Lawson, Mark Rylance, Rufus Sewell, none of those are really outstanding performances, as far as I'm concerned. Entertainment performance, of course, Noel Edmonds has got his BAFTA, so he must be very pleased.
With his boxes.
With his boxes. Open the box! And that stuff he writes on his hand. Of course, there is no strategy for Deal or No Deal. Can I just say, it's a guessing game.
Right.
You can't work it out. And that whole thing on the phone to the banker, there's no one there either. I think it's all inside Noel's head.
I always thought he was a bit strange.
Yeah, it's the jumpers.
Talking about awards, the Sony Awards nominations were also announced this week, and your favourite radio broadcaster...
Well, I am personally devastated because Johnny Vaughan isn't nominated anywhere. Unless there's, like, best regional presenter who does funny dancing for the adverts. I don't know. It's a shame. Maybe he's just not very good.
Well, I'm sure that's not what it is. I do know that you're a big fan of him.
Yes, I do. I know. Me and him have had sort of...
Bit of a history.
We've got a bit of a history, yeah, because I didn't like all the rubbish programmes that he made when he signed that deal at the BBC. And then he sort of invoked some analogy about curry houses and people who didn't like curry.
Oh dear,
that
right.
That was me.
Well,
but yes,
I
but
think
my heart goes out to him because, you know, they've managed to nominate Jamie Theakston, so why haven't done not? Him? I don't know.
Anyway, moving swiftly on, so something was going on with Kirsty Allsop this week. What was that?
Yes, well, she's been one of, like, David Moonface Cameron's celebrity kind of fans.
Right.
And she was supposed to go to Leeds or something to see him for some sort of housing thing.
There was some launch that the Tories were doing, like, wasn't there, to do with supporting
homeowners. No one can buy housing or something. But then he dropped out, and then she didn't want to go, and then she was going again, and he was going again, because she would only go if he was there.
Right.
So the moral of that story, of course, is never work with animals or celebrities.
Okay.
I mean, I don't care what Kirsty Allsop says. I'm waiting to see who Sarah Beeny's going to endorse. Because we love the Beeny.
We do indeed. Now, finally, we were a bit nasty about Davina last week.
We were scuppering our chances to get invited to the BAFTAs.
We had letters.
She's presenting this year. No! Oh, were they written in green ink? Lovejohn, no. yes, well, I think we can take the heat off Davina this week because Graham Norton's coming back.
Okay.
Strictly Dance Fever. So we can pick on him instead, like the playground bullies we are.
Terrible programme.
Yes, it's just the wrong vehicle for him. I don't know what the BBC do, sort of inserts people into these vehicles. See also the bigger picture. And it's just like, no, if you're going to send them to career death, give them a hearse.
Thank you very much, Gareth McLean. That's it for this week. The full Q&A with David Tennant and Billy Piper, plus the full chat that I did with Russell T Davis and Jane Tranter, are on the website now, guardian.co.uk/podcasts, for all Doctor Who fans. If you've got any comments about what we've been talking about this week or what you'd like us to discuss in future programmes, it's blogs.guardian.co.uk. I'll be back with more Media Talk soon. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.